Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Cinema Sommelier, where, of course, we taste test movies. I am Gary T. Ward.
And I'm Zachary Wachaleski. And today, we're going to talk about the lovely 1975 Jim Sharman movie, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Rocky Horror Picture Show. This is a movie that we shouldn't need to introduce. It's been around for a number of years now, and it's been in theaters since 1975. It is a classic. It is the ultimate cult classic movie. So essentially, the movie is a transvestite alien who makes his own sex slave and has a giant party about it. So the movie kind of takes place where Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick, their characters get broken down. They go to a castle and they basically crash this giant fun alien party of weird eclectic people. And it's a blast. It's just a fantastic fun movie to watch.
Yeah, it's definitely stood the test of time, right? And I can't tell you why. Like, I don't know why, like, this movie works so well, because it is just so odd. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's why it works. But yeah, as you said, it has been in movie theaters consistently since 1975. It was ultimately a flop.
Yep.
People were like, nah, this is stupid. It worked as a show, though. It worked as a show. I believe it came out in 73. And they brought it to America in 74, and they're like, let's do a movie. So the movie came out in 75. Very, very quick turnaround for all of this. Richard O'Brien, who wrote the music, was a struggling actor-writer at the time, and he's like, I'll do this, because he loved all these classic horror movies. Who doesn't? They're so much fun. And he's like, I'll do this. But he also loved the bubblegum pop of the 50s and the new wave kind of style of like Bowie and stuff in the 70s. So we created this literal conglomeration of everything. And it worked. It worked for shows. It would sell out shows. And then they're like, let's bring it to America. And it sold out shows. And then they're like, let's make a movie. And then they're like, no.
Nah.
Now, we don't have to do that. But then upon second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth viewings, people were like, this is it. And it ran the midnight circuit. Which I didn't know. I mean, I knew it was a thing, but I didn't know that was a special, like, let's just, this movie sucks at 8 o'clock, let's play it at midnight. Like, right. I didn't know that was a thing, right? And it gained the success and notoriety that still has it playing in college towns and bars and everything until today, right?
Right. It's crazy thinking about how this movie got its legs of like whoever's idea it was to be like, you know what, is this like the marketing person who's just like, this isn't working at 8 o'clock. Like, this isn't that type of movie. Nobody's going to it. Like, I think Meatloaf and Richard O'Brien went to a movie showing and they were the only two people there, like back when it first opened up. And they're like, this can't happen. Like, its budget was $1.4 million, which in the grand scheme of things, I guess, isn't that much for a movie. But from 1970s perspective, like, this should have done much better.
Yeah.
Up until they got this weird group of individuals to be like, hey, we enjoy this movie. Like, this is great. And then they started calling out to it. There started being fan interactions. People would go for the fan interactions. And it just got this hype. It's got this train. And it's never slowed down. I guess up until COVID, potentially. I don't know how it's been doing with people not being able to go to movie theaters. But hopefully, true, now that things are getting back to normal, quote unquote,
we can
start going back to theaters. I know my fiance and I are looking to go to a Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's way more fun with an audience. That's for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. I was on the plane of never seeing it, and I, you know, for those of you who don't know, all of our 13 listeners, I am an actor, and I'd never seen it before in any iteration of it. And I saw it for the first time like 4 years ago, and I saw a live, and I know this is a film podcast, but let's face it, Rocky Horror surpasses every single medium that you need to be involved with. And I saw the show and I'm like, this is weird, but I'm very infatuated with it. Like, I didn't understand it. I mean, obviously, I think I had heard Time Warp, as everybody has. And I didn't know a lot about it from there. And like, I'd heard of Shadowcast and like all this kind of stuff. And I didn't know a lot about it, but I watched it and I'm just like, this is fantastic. And there's just naked people everywhere. And the message, which we'll probably get into later, I think is fantastic. Like, it's so, it's just such a thing, such an entity of a, it's its own being, the Rocky Horror Show. And I think that finding success with the movie and with the play or the musical itself is well deserved amongst that community. And I was reading that they had talked to Richard O'Brien, and they were like, "Hey, we want to make this movie, and we want to give it this huge budget." And he's like, "No, I want the cast from the musical in the movie." Because they were going to give it a huge budget and find all these big stars at the time to do it, and that nature. And he's like, "No, I don't want that." And so he sacrificed budget for, you know, the cast that he has. And I think that was what made it. I could not imagine Tim Curry not being Frankenfurter. I cannot imagine Meatloaf not being Eddie. I cannot imagine no Susan Sarandon. Like, it's so iconic. As a performance, as a movie, as art, as a musical, as everything it is, it's iconic in every sense of the word.
Yep. No, I think the only two people that weren't in the original screenplay were Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick. Those are the only two that were added in there. And I think that they played it so well. And like, that almost kind of has a good feeling to it, right? Like, I think of movies that make people feel a bit out of place, from the beginning, they're like, we're going to separate the actors, and in coming in and acting, they're supposed to be out of place. Those two were. And so those are the only two people who they brought in as like, they wanted to get big US names so they could try to hype this movie up in the US. And so they add those two in there, and it does kind of make them look and feel out of place. They weren't in the original screen, like, showing of the play. So it's like, that fits so well.
Yes.
And I love the addition of those two. Obviously Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick are phenomenal as well. And, but like, Tim Curry steals the show. Like, he needs to be 100%. The same guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and just to watch those two, they do such a great job of being those outcasts.
Right.
Right. They're so perfect, and they're so, like, you know, peachy and like all this kind of stuff, and do everything by the book, and like, you know, read the instructions before they play a game, and like all that kind of stuff. Yep. They're not the dive into anything kind of people. I mean, what, there's a line in the song when Brad is talking in the song "Damn It, Janet," where he is, the first thing Brad wants to do after asking Janet to be his wife is go back to his professor, because that's where they met. I'm like, no. I as a married man myself, the first thing I did was not want to go back to a friend of ours and be like, "Hey, you introduced us, Mazel." You know, I don't want to do that. And it just shows how innocent they are, and you know, they're so clean the whole time, and there's, you know, it, I mean, the movie opens with them at a church, you know, it's so it establishes this like innocence and this like, I can't be messed with, I can't be tamed, I'm proper. And you just slowly see that through the movie, not get diminished, but you see it unravel, I feel, just a little bit, and see who they truly are, because these are, you know, these are adults. I don't know, I'm guessing they're what, at least out of college. So we'll say at least 22. Yep. Right. Unless it was it was professor. So yeah, probably 22. And so you get to see these people unravel and you get to see how different societies take to different, you know, forms of openness, if you will.
Right. No, I think, like, to your point of just like who they are in this, of like, I mean, once we introduce all of the people in Frankenfurter's group, of in that castle, like you see just how wild and unique those individuals are. When you're introducing Janet and Brad in that, you're just like, they're not that type of people. Like,
yeah,
building up to this, like, and I think the one thing that I really liked in doing my research, I love looking to see what people are saying or like continuity issues or stuff like that. And there's a common one of when they're in the car driving, they actually have the resignation speech of Nixon, I think, or somebody in the car playing. But it's a common, like, people are like, well, it's not the right time. That wouldn't have been playing on the radio at that point. And it's like, no, the director or whoever, I don't know if it's Richard O'Brien or the director, is like, Brad's just the type of person to record that and just listen to it back again. So it's like, that's the weird type of like structured, organized, I guess normal is probably the appropriate word. Like that's the right role that they're trying to play and then trying to show that like, hey, nothing is normal. Like when they get introduced into this like wild and untamed house, castle, they kind of start to reveal who they really are and they start to become a bit more wild and a bit more of the type of person that everybody kind of has inside of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's beautiful about this movie is watching that.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just so like it's you see these people in Frankenfurter's castle and you're like, oh my God, they're so weird. And then they're not.
Right?
It's like you adapt or see yourself in them so much more than you see yourself in Brad and Janet. Because, right, you know, especially when you meet them. When you meet Brad and Janet, it's like, oh, they're so quaint. They're so cute and it's adorable.
Right.
And then you meet them and you're like, they're so much more fun. And also maybe Brad and Janet are kind of boring.
Right.
Maybe they're vanilla right now. And we, you know, life isn't about being vanilla. Life isn't about following the rules. You have to take risks and chances, right? And I think that that's what kind of, and you have to accept people. It's all about, I think the whole movie is about acceptance. Yeah. And I think that's such a well-crafted message in this that, you know, not everyone's going to get.
Yeah.
I think everyone, you 100 different people can watch this movie and you're going to get 98 different, like, oh, well, I got this from it. So, and I think that's such a good thing about not just this film, about, you know, if you can do that as a film, as a story, then I think you're doing something right because it's not going to be the same to everybody.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. My question for you on your comment of like, it's a movie where you kind of connect more to the outcasts or the wild people that are in that castle. Is that always, I don't know, is that always true? Or is that mostly because of the culture now around Rocky Horror? Like if we watch that in one of the original screenings of Rocky Horror where there weren't people shouting out things, there wasn't the people who are dressing up in costumes and bringing props and everything like that interaction, would you still feel that connection to the people who are doing the time warp dance? Or would you feel that connection to, I don't know. I guess I see it as like, you now connect to them because that's the culture that's built around Rocky Horror. And I think that's beautiful. I think that's important now, but as a standalone movie that might not necessarily exist. Like if you're watching this in the quiet of your own apartment, like I did, like I'm just picturing the people yelling at screens and I'm sort of doing it in my head because that's what's been established now. Prior to that, as a movie, it doesn't necessarily have that. It still has the same morals and the same end goal, but as a movie, it needs that bit of like, you need to be that person who's yelling at the screen and that person who's dressing up and just being who you are. That's what kind of helps.
You need that energy, right?
Yeah.
And I'll quote Frankenfurter, don't dream it, be it.
Right.
I guess you would. I thankfully the first time I did see any iteration of this project, we'll say, was a live production. And right, it was odd. And I'm like, okay, this is what we're doing. But it was very cool. The going into it, it was a midnight showing of a play. Right. It was everything did happen. The underwear run happened. Everyone was dressed up. There were just body parts in your face the entire time. And I guess you would. So I was introduced to it with that. Was it
right
when you watched it on your couch or wherever you were? Was that the first time you had seen it?
No. So I mean, again, I've seen this with shadow casts and in theaters, midnight showings. Like, that's how I was introduced to it, and that's how I know and love Rocky Horror. But it feels missing when you watch it by yourself or in the comfort of your own home where there's not people yelling with you. Like, I mean, as things are happening, it's just like, all right, they bust out the newspapers and they hold it over the head. I'm like, buy an umbrella. What are you doing? Like, I'm screaming at the screen, but I'm like, there's nobody to enjoy that with. Like, part of this movie is the culture. It is that phenomenon of, like, you go to a movies nowadays and somebody says something to the screen, you're like, quiet, like, shut up. Like, I'm trying to watch the movie.
Exactly.
This movie isn't that type of movie. Like, you're never going to be able to go to a movie and see Rocky Horror Picture Show and not have people yelling at the screen, not have people dressed up in costume. Like, that's just what this is. So I kind of, it's super important that they got to that place.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have that place on its own. Like, it needs you to be a part of the movie for this movie for me to be successful.
No, 100%. I think that's why it wasn't successful at the start, until people kind of slowly realized, oh, we can have more fun with this.
Right.
So I'd like to issue a challenge to anybody listening that has not seen any iteration of this movie or this show live. I want them, the first time they watch it, I want them to watch it at home. Yep. And if you order it, I will Cash App you. You just let me know. I will Cash App, Venmo, Zelle, whatever you need me to do. I think it's like $3 or $5 on like Amazon or something. Watch it for the very first time in your home by yourself, or maybe with a spouse or a loved one or brother, sister, whatever. And then the next part of this challenge is to go see it live somewhere. Yep. Either a play, like a live showing of it, or in a movie theater that's doing a midnight showing, and see those different energies, feel those different energies. And I even implore you to dress up if you want to, if you liked it that much.
Highly recommended.
You kind of have to.
Yeah.
Please, somebody take this challenge. Let us know either on our website or on our Instagram or something like that. Let us know. I want to see this little project. It's October now. I want to see this project, and I want to see what happens with it, because you brought up a very good point, and I think that's fantastic. So let me know. And even if you haven't, let us know your own experiences with Rocky Horror Live or seeing a shadow cast or something like that. Right. So let us know. Please let us know. It's Halloween. It's the most wonderful time of the year. I say it's Halloween, it's October. It's the most wonderful time.
Close enough. Yeah, exactly.
Most wonderful time. So I was reading about this show as I do, and I found probably one of the most interesting bits of trivia that I have maybe ever found. And you might be on the same page as me, you might not be. But did you know, as far as film is concerned, the term Easter egg in film originated with Rocky Horror?
That is something I didn't come across in my research, no.
Because, and I'll read this some of this article from What Culture, which I think is a reputable source. They would often have, it goes, well, according to a few sources, one day on the set of Rocky Horror, the cast decided to have a traditional Easter egg hunt, because why the heck not, right? But apparently some of the eggs were hidden so well that nobody found them. And when filming resumed, some of them accidentally ended up appearing in the frames of the movie. There's an origin story with that. So the movie-going world is totally and utterly obsessed with these things. And this is an actual... this is an actual Easter egg, right? So these Easter eggs were actually there. This is by What Culture. It came out May 26th, 2017. I love that. I love that as far as film is concerned, and you can say that it's the actual origins, or people are just talking about actual Easter eggs because they found stuff, but the origins of finding an actual Easter egg in a film comes from forgotten Easter eggs in the Rocky Horror Picture Show from 1975. And I love that bit of trivia.
It's funny because Game of Thrones did that in their last season and everyone ridiculed them. But Rocky Horror does it and it's fantastic. No, I think that's great. That is so cool and something that I definitely didn't know. I thought you were going to go towards some of the interesting details around the production of this movie. But no, in terms of Easter eggs, like I think people on set had fun with it, right?
Yeah.
Like this movie isn't perfect. It's not a movie that like a film critic's going to look at and be like, oh my gosh, they did this. Like at certain points you can see like a guy in a white t-shirt because he's just on set and accidentally snuck in the frame. Like there's things like that happened. And I think around the production of it, like the quality wasn't great. It's 1975 and like they were trying to produce a movie out of a show that they did on stage. And it was like a 40-minute show when they first originally wrote it. And they're like, let's add the time warp. Like it's not perfect, but the fact that it's so unique and that it has these sorts of Easter egg moments and these things of just like, hopefully they had fun. Like it seems like they did. I mean, I know I was reading stuff on production, like Meatloaf wasn't having a great time a lot of the time. Like it wasn't very safe.
Okay. Here's a quick little thing. So I have the pleasure right now of playing Eddie and Dr. Scott in a rendition in Valdez, North Carolina of the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Go see it. Go check it out. Plug.
Please. Absolutely. And so in my actor's research, I've looked up Meatloaf things. Like I've looked up Meatloaf videos and I just don't like the dude. Like he's
just a miserable human.
No, he's miserable. He's pretentious. He still thinks he's God's gift to women when he never was. Like you have an okay voice sometimes, and you just need to get off your pedestal.
Hey, that's fair.
If Meatloaf thinks that he's the crown jewel of this movie, he is sadly
very wrong. Right. And like on the show, Dr. Scott and Eddie are played by the same person. So he was mad that he wasn't going to also get to be Dr. Scott in the movie. Like he was unsafe on the motorcycle. So he's like, I'm not going to do that. Like they had a stunt double do it. So like there's things like that in production, but there's also a lot of like, apparently the castle that they filmed it in didn't have any heat or air condition. And it was filmed like October through December in England. So it's like very cold and wet. Like Barry Bostwick was just like, I was wet the entire time. There were leaks in the castle. I think Susan Sarandon got pneumonia at some point because, I mean, she's wearing nothing for practically the entire movie. And she had to swim at one point in a non-air conditioned castle. Like there's just so much to it that I'm like, yeah, it probably wouldn't happen in today's day. So yeah. I don't blame the complaining, but there's also kind of like, it's a fun movie. Now looking back at it in filming it, I'm sure would have been miserable from certain aspects of it.
Yeah. But you know, I don't know. I'm on both sides of that fence. Like, yes, be safe. Yes. Whatever. I will say the production we're doing is an outdoor production. So like we're only going to stop if it thunders. It could be 40 because it's North Carolina weather. So it could be like 40 degrees and raining. Or it could be 80 degrees and blazing sun, right? You never know because it's October in North Carolina. But we signed on to do the project.
Yep.
We know what we're doing as actors, as performers, as entertainers. And yes, some things are unsafe. And you got out of it. Like you had a stunt performer do your motorcycle ride. Great. That's what they're there for. You help somebody else get employed. But as far as like complaining about the conditions, I'm sure you had somewhere warm to go. You could go sit in a car. You're in a scene of the movie. You have a song. You're the most clothed person in that entire film.
Yeah, that's true.
So like,
he's probably the warmest of the entire, because it's like a leather jacket. He has everything. He's not in just underwear like Brad is in the entire movie.
Meatloaf, calm down. I hope you hear this. God.
He's one of our 13 listeners.
He's one of our 13 listeners.
I think like as we sort of start wrapping this up, I think it's so important, like you said, going to watch this movie in an area of openness. Like, even on Rocky Horror Picture Show's website, like, they have like the rules of like first time viewers, like, here's what it is. It's like, they recommend you dress up. They recommend you go and like, don't judge people. Like, everyone sort of has their own uniqueness. So like, and I'll continue plugging your show as well. Like, go watch it. I mean, do your challenge first, watch it home and alone by yourself and see what you think of it. Then go see it. Go watch you play Meatloaf's most hated character. But now this show, like, it's just so hard to talk about without just focusing on the culture around it. And I'm curious, like, do you have favorite scenes, favorite moments from this beyond just everything that Tim Curry does?
Oh my God. Tim Curry's the GOAT. Hands down. You know, I love the oddities that are this movie. Yeah. Like, it doesn't, yes, a lot of focus is on Tim Curry or Rocky or Frank, Gary. Just everybody, right? They're focused on everybody. I love the odd looks from the from like a lot of the extra dancers in the crowd. I love, you know, the things that make you like, that was weird. Like, I love that kind of stuff. But as far as favorite, I love the way when it's near the end of the movie, I think it's during I'm Coming Home or I'm Going Home. I love the way that was shot, because it's so different than the rest of the movie.
It is.
It looks almost documentary style, like he's got a handheld camera in front of him. And it's so vulnerable as far as like a style or as far as, you know, a performance is concerned. And I love that. I think that's so fantastic. So as far as favorite scenes or favorite shots, that is up there, because it's so unlike everything and it hooks you in.
Yeah. No, I think that's interesting to me. I have a very different perspective, because to me, the movie kind of like slowly goes up and up. It gets to this climax of like everything good Tim Curry does. Like, it is just phenomenal. And then it kind of like starts going downhill at that point, like at the point where he's like freezing people to the floor and then going off and like doing, I'm just like, all right, we've hit like a lull in the movie. And maybe that's just me knowing the audience interactions throughout those portions, and like it sort of like slows down as you get towards the end of the movie. It's just like left and right people are calling things out. So I don't like the ending as much. Like, I don't like that build up, the stage dancing and the pool. And it's very important to the plot of the movie, but to me, the plot of the movie is less important.
True. Yeah.
So like, I don't know. I think my favorite is, like, honestly, anything at the beginning, like anything as Rocky's getting made, like it's actually Tim Curry. The reason why he's like so helter skelter, like twisting these color knobs, is because somebody off camera is yelling colors at him and he's trying to like figure out where it is and like turn that color. So it's like, there's moments like that I'm like, that's what makes the movie feel real. And so I like all of that, the building of Rocky and running around. And I mean, even Meatloaf's song where he's just like sort of all over the place, like those scenes, the fun chaos, that's what I love the most about the movie.
Okay. All right. Let's kind of speed round a little bit. Let's go to, we'll go scoring and we'll go drinks, because we're approaching time. I'll let you go first.
Okay.
So score this and what's a drink that it reminds you of, or that you should pair with it.
So for me, again, scoring is hard, because I'm used to scoring movies as a film critic or whatever kind of film critic I may be. And I don't think that that's relevant to this movie. Like, I think that this movie, you're scoring a lot more than just how the movie was made and what it makes you feel like. You're scoring everything. So as a movie, probably wouldn't be very high. As the phenomenon that it is now, I've got to give it somewhere really high, because it puts me in this nostalgic, like, be yourself. Like, that's what this movie is all about, is like, don't judge others and be who you are. And that message is so important, and it really hits home and does a really good job of portraying that in today's day. So it's probably a 78. I'm going to dock it a little bit just for the fact that it's not a great movie. It needs other things with it, but like on its own, it's great. And the wine comparison, and I'm really proud of this one because the dinner scene that they have where, spoiler alert, Meatloaf is the dinner. Like literally Meatloaf, the guy is the dinner. They are pouring wine and every glass that they pour the wine into is just like helter skelter all over the table. So right? Of course is going to be a red table wine because it's one of my favorite things to yell out is that must be table wine. So that is what Rocky Horror is.
Okay. Okay. All right. I feel you on that one. I'll try to go with the likes of kind of what you said. As a movie, no. Like, it's not like, I'm not going to be like, have you seen this film? It's it's smashing. That's another Tim Curry reference. Smashing. He's so good. But I'm going to, it's not going to be high, but it's going to be higher based on experience and based on atmosphere and based on the religion that it creates, right?
Yeah.
And the acceptance, the kind of, you know, us versus them kind almost mentality that it has in the beginning, and it kind of morphs into acceptance. I'm going to give it, in honor of the year it came out, I'm going to give it a 75.
Wow.
I could go a little higher, but I'll go 75 because as a film, as an experience, absolutely.
Right.
And
as an experience, it's a 10 out of 10. Like, I could not recommend it any higher. Watching it alone on my couch, I knocked it down a couple pegs.
Yeah, it's like a, okay, maybe not.
Right.
As far as a wine or a drink is concerned, I actually looked it up. It's ready in 3 minutes and it serves one. There is a drink from food.com called the Time Warp. And was that cheating? 100%. It's Midori liqueur, Malibu rum, pineapple juice, raspberry cordial, cherries, and cracked ice. And it's green with red cherries in it, and it just looks fascinating. It kind of looks like toxic waste, and I'm all about it.
That feels fitting.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like the sludge you would find at the bottom of a barrel.
Rocky was birthed out of that kind of colorful right. concoction.
Absolutely.
So it's perfect.
Okay, I guess really quick before we bounce, it is time to pick the next movie. So, producers, spin that wheel for us. And the wheel has landed, and oh, praise God.
Another
we
classic.
Are going to be reviewing 1993's Kenny Ortega film, Hocus Pocus. Ah,
what a good Halloween movie.
It's so good. I love this movie. You know, it came out in July. We'll get into that next time.
What? Oh my gosh. Okay.
July 16th. Anyway, so bring your black flame candle.
And your crystal ball.
And
meet us. In Halloween.
Salem?
Is it Salem?
Marvelous. Yeah, it's Salem.
This has been Cinema Somali Day. I'm Zachary Wachaleski.
And I am Gary T. Moore. Until next time, friends.
Go watch yourself some Hocus Pocus.
Absolutely.